Good morning. Happy New Year, and welcome to Black Book Talk, February 2026. Our theme today is New Things, New Ways. I'm here today. We are the special guest today. I'm here today with
Patricia Welch, Librarian Emeritus. And Emma, I think you said February, and even though I do find time is moving very swiftly. Please, we are just in January.
You are so right.
Taking it a little slower.
Happy New Year. I skipped a whole month. But I'm Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman, and I'm here with Patricia, you just heard, and
O.B. Hill, community historian.
This is a great day. The sun is shining and life is good. And we're looking forward to wonderful new things in 2026. We are looking at some wonderful books that we are sure that you want to read or share with other people. The first book that I want to talk about is our Everybody Reads book for this year. And Everybody Reads is sponsored by Multnomah County Libraries. And of course, Patricia knows more about this than me, since she is a former Multnomah County librarian.
Right. Well, Everybody Reads is an opportunity for everybody in the, not just in the city of Portland or Multnomah County, but I'll say the Multnomah metropolitan area, to read the same book, and come together in various locations to discuss it. And the wonderful thing about Portland, I've always admired that Portland really is a book-loving town. I mean, the fact that PALS is so popular, you know, and our bookstore has a national reputation, a national image, shows that. But I mean, people are getting together and they're gonna discuss the book in the library, in bookstores, in cafes, in their homes. So it's just a wonderful opportunity to unify the city in speaking about one wonderful book.
And our book this year is Lovely One by Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. It's a memoir sharing her journey from her life with her family during segregation to becoming the first Black woman on the U.S. Supreme Court. The book highlights her education, her career thus far, and her family. Ketanji Brown Jackson was born in Washington, D.C. She did her undergraduate work and her law degree from Harvard University. And she began her term on the Supreme Court in June of 2022. It doesn't seem like she's been there that long, but yep, 2022. The book is wonderful. There's a quote from the book. "Never again would I allow to shut again. Never again would I allow fear to shut me down when faced with the deep end of any circumstance. In the future, even if afraid, I would swim." Justice Jackson is a superb storyteller, and her memoir will enthrall any reader. So again, it will be wonderful to share it. Everybody Reads goes from January through March, so you have plenty of time to pick the book up from the library, plenty of time to read it, and to be able to share it in discussion with other people.
And the good news is that the library buys, you know, they have like far more copies of this particular book than they would buy of any other book. So, I mean, you really do have an opportunity to go into your local library and get that book. But, you know, we also want to encourage people to support local bookstores and, you know, permanently. So you want to consider that too, that copies of the book will be available everywhere.
And the author is coming to town in March. I think it's March 12th when she'll be at the Arlene Snitzer doing a talk.
And probably we'll have books on sale there. And frequently when they do these visits, you can get an autographed copy of the book too.
Oh.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Obi, last month you were being a gentleman and wanted ladies to go first. I think it's nice to have a little diversity, female voice, male voice, female voice. So I'm gonna let you go first, go before me this time if you'd like to.
Okay, I'm going way back. I picked up a magazine that cost 20 cents in 1965, March 11th, Jet Magazine. And it was dealing with, will death of Malcolm X spur more bloodshed? I could not believe it. I picked it up and read all of this information about him being killed at the Audubon Ballroom. And it led me to another book by Henry Louis Gates Jr., 13 Ways of Looking at a Black Man. This book was, how can you put this? He deals with a chapter on not only dealing with Malcolm X, but he interviews Louis Farrakhan. This is a must read. I hadn't read it in, this book was 1997, and looking at this book will make you really understand different movements and the beginnings of different religious compacts. It's a great book and a must read if you can find a copy of it. Thank you.
You know, that's fascinating. A lot of people only know Professor Gates as the host of the the genealogy show on public broadcasting. They know him because of that, or either because he was arrested going to his own home, and Barack Obama set up this, it was like a beer summit or something between the professor, the police officer who arrested him. I don't know if it was in the White House or where he lived, but I am fascinated to realize that Professor Gates, also known as Skip Gates, he's been out here a long time. You're saying 1997?
Yes.
And many of us did not become aware of him until the 2000s and probably the mid-2000s early teens in the 2000s. Where did you find this book? Or you just had it in your collection a long time?
Well, it's part of my collection of my library. I have books dating, oh my goodness, back 30, 40, 50 years.
Okay, and where did you find the Jet Magazine?
It's part of a collection that I had. I've had that for 15 years, but I hadn't picked up the stack of Jets for a while. But it just happened that it just came to me.
Well, I understand. I mean, okay, now I don't feel so bad because I don't want to give up any of my old issues of Essence Magazine. I just don't want to. Okay. Well,
other thing I wanted to mention about Skip Gates before we move from that is that he came to Portland about 30 years ago and was at the old Congregational Church. He was publishing a book called The Buns Woman. Mm-hmm. He was talking about that. It was after he had had some surgery and he was in pain when he came out here. But it was kind of a slave narrative.
Okay. So now you're telling me I need to go back and look him up and see what else he's written.
Okay. Yeah.
My book for the first book for this month is The Look by Michelle Obama, co-written by her stylist Meredith Koop, K-O-O-P, and it's published by Crown Publishing. And on the one hand, you can approach this book from many levels. I mean, fabulous photographs. If you're just interested in her look over the years, from there are photographs of her as a little girl, photographs of her as the wife of a state senator, and of course, multi-photographs of her while she was in the White House and then beyond. I saw her on television recently, and it was fascinating to hear her say, you know, talk about the constraints that she was under, or she felt she was under in the White House, and the freedom that she now finds, you know, to do and wear and whatever, now that she's first lady. So what I was impressed with, besides the fact that this is a transition for her, and she's now enjoying a new lifestyle, is the strategic approach that she and her husband took to everything, and certainly to her look. And she says, I mean, she talks about how everything she did, you know, her bare arms, whatever, was fodder for media attention. But she said, as determined as I was not to let any superficial focus hijack the message, I also knew there was an opportunity to flip the script and use clothing to my advantage. That meant being as thoughtful and strategic about how I approach fashion as Barack and I were about all domestic facets of our life in the White House. We were all too aware that as the Black first couple, we couldn't afford any missteps. If everything about me as the first lady was going to be analyzed down to the thread, we were going to leverage that to steer the conversation right back to the issues that mattered. If you want to talk about my gown, let's talk about the BIPOC designer who made it. If you're going to take 100 photos of my sweater, do it while I'm gardening or jumping rope to promote healthy living. If you want me to be on your magazine cover, let the focus be on what I stand for as much as on the heels I'm standing in. And I appreciate it that, you know, while this is a lovely coffee table book, and if you like fashion, it's just, and beauty, it's just great. All her stylists are, you know, they're not only highlighted, but, you know, you have their commentary. But it also shows how she was using her appearance strategically to send certain messages. And it's just delightful to see how, you know, now that she's out of the White House, that like Ketanji, I'm sorry, the Supreme Court, is it Ketanji Jackson or Johnson?
Jackson.
Ketanji Jackson, like her, that now she can wear braids, she can wear her hair anywhere, any way you want to. And these are things that, as an observer, you know, I didn't necessarily think about. I think a lot of people didn't. But they understood that on all levels, as the first Black president and first lady and first family, that they had to be as close to pretty darn perfect as possible. And just in her day-to-day life, she had to consider things like, you know, if she's gonna be out playing with kids, then you wanna have an outfit that has fabric that stretches. You wanna have clothes that you probably don't wanna wear white on certain occasions, because if people are hugging you, you don't want their makeup to come off on your clothes, or you want it to be easily washed. All sorts of things that you can't imagine. But my admiration for her just it's unlimited. It grows because not only is she a woman who's well-dressed and attractive, but she is one smart woman. And we were so lucky to have her as our first lady. So again, I'm recommending The Look by Michelle Obama, published by Crown Publishing.
I am, when you talk to me about that book, I immediately thought about, oh, I can give that as a gift to my daughter and granddaughter.
Absolutely.
So I'm already thinking about how they can use that book and
yes,
who I can give it to. The second book I want to talk about is The Forever Home by Mykael Welch. It's classic, clever design to help you put down roots, is what it says on the book. My neighbor across the street is a young Black man of 25 years old. He lives alone, and one day he walked across the street and asked me what kinds of things make a home. His grandmother and I went to high school together, so my first thought was to say, what comfortable things for you are in your grandmother's house? And I thought, why is he asking me? But I hesitated and I started to ask questions about comfort for him. And then I asked him about what comfort meant to him and what kinds of things say comfort. And then I started talking about his yard because he's always in his yard when I'm driving up. So he wanted, I asked him what he wanted to see in his yard when he drove up each day. And then I saw this author on a morning show. His name is Michael Welch, and he's a young Black man with an eye for design. He has lots of ideas to help homemakers style their living spaces. The book is a coffee table style book with large clear pictures that are a bit masculine to my eyes, but it had a lot of helpful hints and ideas to lead the reader, who the person who's looking at the pictures, to movement. If you're just thinking about it and not doing something, you see the pictures and you think, oh yeah, I could do that, and to make their home a more comfortable surrounding. The colors that I see are great. Lots of them, as I said, are masculine. I bought the book to give to my neighbor for his Christmas present. I figured that would give me some good neighbor credentials. The book is called, the book I'm recommending is called The Forever Home. It's by Michael Welch. And it says on the front that it's classic, clever designs to help you put down roots.
That sounds really nice. Almost as nice as a 1993 Oprah's Book Club selection, A Lesson Before Dying by Ernest J. Gaines. You know, sometimes a reread really is fascinating. On the cover of the book, it says, this majestic, moving novel is an instant classic, a book that will be read, discussed, and taught beyond the rest of our lives. That's the Chicago Times. I picked up the book and started rereading it, and it is really mind-blowing. It's about a gentleman who got a ride with two of his associates and ended up being a witness to a murder by them, and he was placed in jail and put on trial for the murder of a storekeeper. It's a book in a small Cajun community in the late 1940s, and Jefferson is a Black man. He is an attorney who lives with his aunt. And I'm telling you, this book, it deals with the old sayings and cliches of the old folks and how they operate with what they consider to be management or pouting.
Yeah.
It's a must read. Anybody who can pick up a copy of this book should read it. It's A Lesson Before Dying by Ernest J. Gaines, the Oprah Book Club selection in 1993.
Mm-hmm. And also, if you go to the Black Book Talk archives, there's an interview with Ernest J. Gaines. He was a Everybody Reads author, so it's been many years, but dig back, we have his voice.
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, we're getting kind of in the last 10 minutes or so or less. Okay, my next book is by Whoopi Goldberg. It's called Bits and Pieces, My Mother, My Brother, and Me. I am and long have been a Whoopi Goldberg fan, not just because I think she's a great actress and comedian, but I also think that she is a woman of integrity and compassion who has not forgotten from whence she came. I always admire the fact that she, Billy Crystal, and Robin Williams did a telethon called Comic Relief back when all of a sudden these big telethons were becoming a thing. But I love that they chose to help the homeless and she has continued to be in that vein of helping the underserved, the underrecognized, the underdog. So I was curious about what this autobiography would be. It recounts her upbringing in New York and the influence of her nuclear family, which is just her mother, her brother, and her. And I always want to read a little bit, let people hear the voice. So I'm going to read a little bit from the introduction. Probably none of us had the childhoods we think we had. We only have our individual memories of what we believe happened. You can talk to siblings born 2 years apart, and they will give you different perspectives on the same event or experience in their childhoods. So what's that supposed to mean? We can't trust our memories? You know, yeah, that's exactly what it means. When my mother died unexpectedly in August 2010, it took me a while to feel the full effect of her being gone. I still had my older brother, Clyde. As long as he was with me, I had my home base. There were only three of us in my family, mother, brother, and me. I knew Clyde and I would be okay. We were both in our 50s, so I thought I'd have my brother in my life for at least another 25 years. Then 5 years after my mom passed, Clyde suddenly died of an aneurysm. I was stunned by it, but not really surprised in a way. He was different after our mother died. Losing her was devastating beyond words for Clyde, more than he could share with me. When she died, a large part of my brother disappeared with her. Most people couldn't see it, but I did. And she talks about how, you know, what her mother's death meant to her, but also what her brother's death. She said, you know, she got to the point where she questioned the validity of her memories. And she used to ask her brother, am I crazy? Did this really happen? And he'd say something like, it happened, sis, but it was during this time or that time. Now that I no longer have Clyde to set me straight, I have no one left to ask. She talks about that. She talks about her life. There are lots of pictures, black and white pictures, which we all love, so you can actually see the mom. Great anecdotes about what happened when she became famous and her mother got to meet all these really famous people, and how her mom would suddenly turn into like this 60-year-old sex pot when she met certain men that she found sexy. But through it all, she talks about the fact that she was able to become the person that she is because her mother told her that she could. And just knowing, I mean, like her, I come from a very small nuclear family, basically for most of my life. Excuse me. It was my mother, my sister, and me. And again, we parallel the influence of a parent who says that you can. She covers everything from death and grief, and it's done with some humor, but it's really a serious book. But, you know, it's just a great book. If you like Whoopi Goldberg, even if you don't, you'll probably like it. But if you like Whoopi Goldberg, you'll love this book. And again, it's called Bits and Pieces, My Mother, My Brother, and Me by Whoopi Goldberg. It's published by Blackstone Publishing.
Well, I look forward to reading that too. Well, I've got a lot of work to do to catch up with where you all are.
That's the joy of this show. We all learn something.
Well, I want to talk about an old book that I think is worth revisiting. It's called The Conjure Woman. It was published in 1899. It's by Charles W. Chestnut, and it's who was considered an African-American activist. This is a collection of short stories, and I read this little blurb about it. An early slave narrative, a skillfully woven satire on the stereotypes of plantation life and the apparent beneficent white owner. It's told by a series of gentle fables in the style of Aesop. So I'm obviously having one of my old problems, that is getting the words out. It's a collection of slave stories set in post-war North Carolina. Each story involves an element of magic. In one of the stories, it's about a vine that dooms those who eat from it. And another story, it's about a man who's transformed into a tree to avoid being separated from his wife. I love stories like this. It's told through the voice of Julius, who tells these stories of slavery and inequality to a white couple who came down from the North. The stories are carefully crafted. It's an old thing, but it deserves. It's called The Conjure Woman, and it's by Charles W. Chestnut.
That is a very, very interesting book. I have that in my collection and have read it a few times. Mentioned slavery, there's one other book that I'd like to recommend on slavery. And it's Turning Points in World History, American Slavery. A great book, essays about slavery. You need to read it. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, and because we're drawing to an end, I'm not going to say a lot about this book. I'm just going to refer people to a book called Straight Shooter by Stephen A. Smith. It's a memoir of second chances and first takes, published by Gallery Group. I'm not a sports fan. I don't know much about Stephen A. Smith, but you can't be alive and aware nowadays without knowing about something about him. I looked through a few headlines about him. Stephen A. Smith knocks Trump for calling affordability Democratic con job. Stephen A. Smith calls Sharon Moore's firing disappointing. Joy Reid says Stephen A. Smith gets paid for the nasty things he says about black women. And there's talk that Stephen A. Smith wants to be the president. I don't know, but I tell you, this book gives you a solid background on how Stephen A. Smith, a man who was thought to be, you know, just a child with low income, he was dyslexic. And now he's a national, probably an international figure. So if you want to know something about an interesting person, read Straight Shooter, a memoir of second chances and first takes by Stephen A. Smith.
Well, we've come to the end of our show again. First month in the year. Thank you all for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you in February of 2026. I'm Emma Jackson Ford saying see you next month.
OB Hill, community historian.
Oh, sorry. No, OB, say it again. I'm sorry. I was talking over you.
Well, you asked me to go before you, so I did.
Patricia Wells said, Happy New Year, everybody. And I want to thank Emma and OB. I learned so much. I mean, I'm like the list, all the listeners. I learned so much from the books that you all share. So you're making my New Year start really well.